I better get the rest of this put away.
Call 866-404-3663 or go to freezedryguide.com.
You're listening to The Micro Effect. The Micro Effect Broadcasting Network.
Carrie Cassidy from Project Camelot, and I am on the air with Rebecca Jernigan from Journeys with Rebecca Radio. And we are expecting a caller at this time, and I'm wondering if perhaps he's called in. His name is Dr. John Waterman. That's not his real name. He is something of an expert on the militia movement here in the U.S., and he's also a radio talk show host on the air in Europe. John, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hi, Carrie.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing good.
Good. Glad to hear it. I'm just calling you, John. I know that's not your real name, but...
That's fine.
I guess that's
I've got
okay,
a split
right?
personality. That's okay. I got a split personality.
Right. I was really fascinated, and by the way, we're on the air here with Rebecca Jernigan. You want to say hello,
Rebecca?
Rebecca? Rebecca, are you there?
Yes, hello, yes. Nice to meet you, John.
Hi, Rebecca.
And Rebecca herself has a radio show quite popular in the Midwest, and so maybe sometime you can also join her on her show. You've been sending me some really fascinating information behind the scenes over here, and I just thought maybe we could chat a little bit about it. You were basically saying that you had a contact who was working against the group. We recently had a whistleblower in regard to what they were talking about, what was called the Anglo-Saxon Mission, and Bill did a written interview with this whistleblower, and also has a video that he in which he was just talking about his basically commenting on the testimony. But what is it, John, that you were basically trying to tell me here? Because you've got some very fascinating background about maybe this group that was planning or is planning for a war with China.
Well, it's many hours to explain it, but basically, there is a group that was started in 1919 that was actually housed in the monarch's property, Westminster Abbey, to house records of information, books, and so forth, of the history of the monarchical lineage of England. Now, when we look at what I'm about ready to say, I want to kind of give a caveat, because too many times I think we begin to think that the monarchical systems are all diabolically bad and that they're leading us into this oblivion that we have. I think probably my viewpoint, a balanced view of that would be that we have had the monarchical systems taken over, because we do have this story out there that I actually believe occurred called King Arthur, and he wasn't diabolical. So why do we have that story existing at all, while at the same time we have the monarchical systems that we see today, like, you know, that are going to the Bilderberger meetings with an entire agenda that seems to be, I mean, we haven't seen it. If you're from Missouri, you'd have to say, show me. But, you know, from, but, you know, we talked, you were talking about that earlier. You can sense that their agenda is not very good. And so what we have is a story this organization preserved in order to bring about the knowledge that the monarchical system was not always bad. Now that's where this is. Now within this group, there is a split. It's a fairly vigorous split, if I could say it that way. One of which, one group never talks about alien, extraterrestrial beings, and the other one does. I happen to be a part of the group, or in the group, of the ones that believe there is. Now, Carrie, I haven't really had a chance to tell you, but you know, there was that operation in the 60s where they were testing gifted people. And I haven't had a chance to tell you, but that testing lasted for more than just the 60s, because I was tested at 13 privately. 2 years later, they pulled me out of school and tested me along with about five others in the library. They closed the library up and had somebody stand at the door so nobody could come in. And then right after high school, as I was going into college, my first, second semester actually, was approached to go into the military while in college. Well, of course, they bait you with all the money and everything, so of course you think about it. But as I began to get groomed for pilot training, I ran into another pilot. Now, this is a story I've not told anybody, so... Well, I might as well unzip it right here, you know. And so I had a fellow that looked me in the eye. This guy looked like a skeleton with the what now today would be fashionable 4 or 5 day beard growth. And he began to outline what I was getting into. And I didn't like what I was hearing. And that was my first glimpse of the real story behind trying to be a patriot, you know. And I began to realize that there was other things going on behind that. So I had this line in the sand that I could continue in until they had their hooks and claws in me that wouldn't allow me to get out. And I was running around in my BBDs at this medical center, you know, getting ready to go in past that line. And I ran into this fella, and then we had this talk, and he had this, it was more of his, it was more unspoken communication about how you could feel his anxiety. What he had experienced was so heavy that really just made my bones shiver. And that's why I didn't go in. But, so I quit, only to have, after I had gotten out of undergraduate, to have the Navy come after me for being put back in a Navy program for classified submarine training. Now, I wouldn't go, but they didn't give up. My last testing was at 41, and that's when I told them no more. That was it. I had had it. You know, each time, you know, they found the same answer. You know, they couldn't measure certain aspects of this testing for how high it went. And, you know, that's not important. But the important aspect was the particular kind of testing that they give you. And I know that when I say they're asking you to fashion certain blocks and configure them and to do all this abstract stuff and do it so quickly that they say, well, you have an hour, you don't have to do it in 10 minutes, and then they ask you to do it again and you do it four times, and you don't make a mistake, they begin to realize they're going to have to test you some more. But I digress to that, for that to say is that it's given me a perspective and a special gift that I have been very thankful that I didn't let them get my claws, their claws, I should say, in me for their use, because there are many gifted people that I think naively marched into this. You've interviewed them. You've got Duncan and others, and sometimes they weren't so voluntary. Didn't get to go in.
Well, Duncan was recruited as a child, and he had no idea what was going on. And that usually seems to often be the case. They start very, very young. And the evidence is starting to mount that there is a lot more of those type of children out there being utilized. And so you're saying you escaped that. But isn't it true you were in the special forces at some point?
No, I wasn't. I've never worn a uniform officially. Mine has always, anything I've always done has been because somebody that was intelligence of the military had me there, but I was as a civilian. So.
Oh, I see.
Many of the things that are done in that arena may look military, but are not military. And it's because of the laws, I guess, Now, the one that I think maybe before we talked about this, and I said, if you want to know about me, go get the book or go get the movie Spy Game with Brad Pitt and Robert Redford, and the fellow that taught me all this, I was Brad Pitt and he was Robert Redford. And yes, just like Brad Pitt, again, I saw a picture that I just didn't want to go into. However, he wasn't a bad guy. This man was trying to recruit people for the intelligence community that's within the intelligence community that are the white hats. They have a very hard time getting white hat attitudes. Can I say it that way? Or the right kind of heart to come in to that kind of arena.
That's fascinating.
You as you begin to leave, and as Frank used to tell me, as he got older, and that was his name, and I can tell you his name, he's passed away now, he began to lose his partners, and they were the good guys. And so as the power elite began to take more control over that arena, of course, they would elevate through the ranks very rapidly people that they could put in place. And so the white hats began to lose ground, passing away and going off. And, of course, then that lends to the fact that, gosh, this might be a multi-generational plan, and it is. So that brings us to this organization in 1919 that saw this plan as being multi-generational and said, we have to do something about it to bring about information and keep it safe so that they would understand what was going on. Now, the caveat with this is, I will tell you, these are people with a good heart. They are not racist, although I'll be talking about races. They're not haters of anybody. So with that caveat, I can tell you that where it started is that they have a very well-documented library about the lineal descendant of the throne in England, and primarily England, not all over Europe is in there, but primarily is in England. However, they do have centers all over the world. And so one of them, just not too many years ago, like maybe 5 or 6 at the most, came to the United States to be housed in the mountains of the Ozarks to be protected there. And there's one in Canada and so forth. So they have begun to spread out. And the reason that they did that is because they began to see that there was a threat to this information by the ruling monarchical people of England themselves, because they began to see policies popping up that were contrary to their being able to exist there in a peaceful way, and they didn't need to have their library ransacked and, you know, burned like they do whenever it seems like any politically unjust regime gets in place. So that's kind of a little bit of their history. And they have an annual conference, and this isn't Scottish. This is just strictly a group of people that believe that the monarchical reign is from the tribes of Israel, and they've got a cluster of documents that goes back considerably. Now, that doesn't mean that the tribe of Judah and some of what might be called Jews today are not part of that group, whereas their belief, and I do believe this too, is that there are, so to speak, a group of those people that have brought themselves into it that have a very aggressive nature that have taken over that identity primarily. And so within, say, Israel itself, the nation of Israel, you'll see that being played out. And you can talk to many people, it's all over the place, how there's two factions and there's a lot of apartheid going on within Israel itself. And one of them happens to be the minority group, which is connected to this group out of England that has this information. Now,
Okay, well, this is very interesting. Somehow this relates to the group that our recent whistleblower, his exposure to what was called the Anglo-Saxon mission. Now,
right.
How does that, can you cross-correlate that a little bit with,
mm-hmm.
with the group that you're talking about?
Because yes.
Somehow it,
yeah.
it seemed to be worked in at least what you were sending me.
Here's how it works out. Let's assume that the monarchical system was put in place originally to benefit mankind. It was a thing that was put in place because at the time, the people that were around were very cognizant of alien beings that were malevolent, you know, not benevolent, and that their agenda was to take everybody and take control of everybody and make them slaves. So they established a governmental system whereby monarchical bloodline rule existed so that these beings could not infiltrate the governmental ruling body. Now, that doesn't mean that they can't go out if they're 30 foot tall and beat somebody over the head and take over like, you know, some countries where they just bully themselves around and take over. However, there was enough people that could have identified this threat back then because they were identifiable. Today, we don't seem to have that ability. Now, I can tell you that within this group, I know people that tell me that they can identify these half-breed people just by
looking. In other words, meaning half ET or hybrids,
right.
Current hybrids, because I think we're all hybrids,
yes.
to be honest with you. But
yes.
you're
yes.
talking about current-day hybrids that
Let's
are that have a very clear
half,
ET lineage.
Yes. Let's say half reptilian or bad agenda hybrid.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
So, John, let me ask you a question. How is it that they're able to identify them? What is it? What is the skill set that they're using?
You know, I don't think there's any, well, being a doctor, you know, I'm not going to be able to give you a scientific answer.
Good, I love it. Truly, I do.
they just can turn around and say you, that is an extremely evil person. And you go, huh, you know, so you just completely out of the blue. I mean, how many times have you, you know, ran into somebody and you just get this over? I've had it occasionally, but these people can, like, they just have a radar. They just seem to know, and they can tell you who they are. And I'm not too sure that wasn't a planned thing. Okay, does that make sense?
Sure.
Okay. Well, anyway.
Well, actually, so how not exactly. I mean, because I want to get the two groups a little, I'm a little more clarity here in terms of, you're talking about a group in which they tried to protect themselves. I'm imagining back in the days when the Anunnaki were on the planet, genetically modifying human beings. And you're saying
they created
monarchies in order that were built on certain bloodlines that would not include the Anunnaki that were interfering with the bloodlines. Is that right?
Right, and that's correct. And that's why we have the stories. Now, I'm not going into the fundamental stuff, the churches. I mean, they kick me out any time I'd ever say this. But that's why you have the stories in the Bible that talk about this group of people called Israel that were not allowed to marry outside of their group. Now, this sounds real patriarchal. There are also reasons why they were patriarchal as opposed to matriarchal, and there were also reasons why they were only allowed, those that only allowed to own land could be the men of the firstborn, because those were always the ones that would and potentially genetically be allowed to inherit a throne and rule. And so they kept trying to protect this ruling body. And that's the real story behind the Guardians of the Grail. Because the word Grail's not a cup. Grail in French means bloodline. And so this body got eventually at different places in Europe infiltrated at different times and compromised. And so today we have Beatrice, you know, and she's this person that's going around with all this oil money and has a pretty diabolical agenda. I just got to admit, she is no longer the de jure ruling body that was supposed to be protected. So is the case with the throne in England. And that's where the body that I'm talking about has a split. There's a group that says she is, and there's a group of us that says she isn't. And that's that de jure de facto difference is what caused them to have to bring Princess Diana from the lineage or from the Stuarts, which I'm part of, back into that line in order for them to have de jure rights. Now, this is a battle of trying to keep them out and them trying to keep their agenda alive by keeping people with that dark agenda in power. So,
okay,
you know,
yes, and, my understanding is Diana came from, you know, the real, what they call the real sort of bloodline of the actual, king, you know, king and queen bloodline, whereas the family did not, that was currently in the throne of England. But how does this relate to the Templars and, because I just actually, this is an interesting subject, Matt, that you've sort of landed on, because I was just at Renly Chateau.
Oh, you were?
Yeah.
Oh, that's amazing.
It is. It's an interesting synchronicity. And can you talk a little bit about how this works into where the Templars fit into this?
Well, the most important principle, basically, to keep in mind is that if you can believe this, which is what I believe, is that really when you think about what we were to have, we had this resurrection of the good thing happened with, like, King Arthur. You know, King Arthur didn't live back in the old patriarch days of Babylon. We're talking more, recent than that. So he resurrected that ideal that was brought through from generation to generation that was supposed to keep going. But as the bad guys got in place, they tried to obliviate all record of that and change the stories of everything around that so that you have to almost become a detective. Well, when you bring that principle forward, it's always important to remember that we had this here to protect us and that it got infiltrated. So if there were any time in the past that anybody like the Crusaders were to be, or Templars were to be good, that agenda changed. But I will tell you this, the same group that has infiltrated the monarchical English throne are the same group that started, I don't mean infiltrated, but actually started the Catholic Church. Now, that doesn't mean that you don't have some good-hearted people that are oblivious to it, but at a certain level, you know, when you're a diabolical person and you're elevating people within that body, if they're not hooking up with your agenda, they just don't get very far, you know.
So, right. Well, okay, then if you don't mind, to go back to this idea of, and I, you know, I'm assuming that because you sent this message to me that you did read the interview with, you know, in regard to the Anglo-Saxon mission. So you're aware of what was talked about there. You're talking about a meeting in which this individual had worked his way up through the ranks. They basically thought he was part of their old boys network. This is my interpretation. And therefore, he was invited to a certain meeting in which a discussion was being had, in which, you know, they were basically slicing and dicing up the future and talking about how, you know, there would be a nuclear exchange that would bring China into the war with Iran, and that eventually the fallout would be, bio warfare against China. In that group, he was feeling like a fish out of water. I'm also curious because that, just the very thought of that, in other words, they let this guy in. He was obviously high up in the English system at this point, but he was not really on board with their agenda. And this group did not have dissension within it, apparently. So do you have some thoughts on that? Because you're basically saying that you believe that this group that you're talking about is, in essence, sort of a white hats group that contains perhaps at least some of the bloodline, the original bloodline, that, you know, and that they are fighting against this movement.
Well, not really. Let's back up on, and I don't mean to confuse you, but there is a very big effort to try and stop that bad element within what you might call this ruling elite monarchical group of people and their lieutenants, meaning the actual people that are hired, so to speak, to be the CEO of it. And I can get into that after the break if you need to.
Okay, well, wonderful. This is actually very fascinating, and I know that this is of special interest to Rebecca as well, so I think this is all very fortuitous. We will continue on the other side of the half hour here with Dr. John Waterman and Rebecca Jernigan. This is Carrie Cassidy, Project Camelot.
Toxins are a serious concern in today's world, and Living Clay is the solution. Live well with Living Clay, the natural calcium bentonite clay everyone is talking about. Living Clay is an exceptionally strong detoxifying and cleansing agent. Born from volcanic ash, rich in trace minerals, and ionically charged, Living Clay absorbs and binds toxins, holding them until they are eliminated. I've been using Living Clay for a long time now, and have not found a better chelator or product to deal with bug bites, burns, etc. You will not be disappointed. You won't find a smoother, stronger, or more effective all-around natural calcium bentonite clay. Living Clay is the solution you've been looking for. It's so pure, you could eat it. Visit www.livingclayco.com or call 800-915-2529 for wellness products that are as good for you as they are for the world around you. That's 800-915-2529. For more educational information, go to www.aboutclay.com.
Hey, Dad.
Hey, buddy.
How come we have a bunch of emergency food stashed in a basement?
Well, it's down there because there are things going on in the world that concern me that I think could potentially interrupt our food supply. And if that happens, I don't want us to starve.
You mean we could, like, go to the grocery and there wouldn't be anything in there?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
There are a lot of ways that could happen. And if it does, a bunch of people are going to starve. And it's my job to make sure that you don't.
Thanks, Dad.
And I don't want to starve either. And that's why we got food from the freeze-dry guy. It's the best long-term storage food you can get. And if it comes to that, we'll be ready.
Dad?
Yeah?
Some people say you're kind of a crackpot, but you make a lot of sense.
Well, thanks, that's what I think.
Get your supply of the best long-term storage food available. Call 866-404-3663 or go to freezedryguide.com.
The time is now. As the walls are closing in on America, Republic Magazine is a beacon of light guiding those that fight for freedom and the restoration of America. Republic Magazine is the ultimate activist tool. Republic Magazine digs in deep to expose the lies and offers real solutions from the experts. No other publication in America offers the real news like Republic Magazine. Get copies to give to friends, family, and neighbors, or simply order a subscription for yourself at republicmagazine.tv. Get informed and stay informed with Republic Magazine, the ultimate resource for your fight against the New World Order. Claim your free digital copy now or order a print subscription online at www.republicmagazine.tv. That's republicmagazine.tv. Or call them toll-free at 800-873-1620. That's 1-800-873-1620.
You're listening to The Micro Effect. The Micro Effect Broadcasting Network.
Project Can. We're on the air with Dr. John Waterman and Rebecca Jernigan. John, so we were sort of interrupted right there, and you were going to go into a bit more detail in regard to how the group dynamics, I guess, behind the scenes are going on in regard to the sort of the power brokers in England, in essence.
Okay. Yeah, that'd be great. I hope I can get it in here. Right now there is an opinion by this group that I'm talking about that's associated, by the way, this group used to be housed within the throne or the crown's property, you know, on their royal estate, and it had to leave because it was being threatened because of this change that was occurring now. One part of this group that helps house this information believes it was a geopolitical event that caused the threat and that they just had bad attitudes. Another group were saying that they think it went deeper and that it actually had to do with the infiltration of malevolent alien beings that were involved in taking over this aspect of the monarchy. And so that then those people that are meeting and are in place today, although they didn't, but just recently, maybe in the last two generations, took over the throne, they had been there for a long time working their way into it. And all, and so that's why we have the city of London, and actually that is completely in their control. And as you know, the city of London is a totally separate city-state that has diplomatic immunity from England. It's separate. It's not London. It's a city within London, but it's a state like the Vatican, and it has totally separate rule. When the Queen goes in there, she has to be in full dress and bring all of her monarchical people with her, and she bows to them. This group
that's fascinating. So it was the city of London that was where, you know, the meeting took place that we are,
right,
you know, our whistleblower is talking about.
Right. So the group that has been compromised is the one that he attended, but being kind of a lieutenant to them, not being at their level, but being involved and probably doing a very good job, I would have to intuitively say that person isn't actually that group. Do you see what I'm saying? And so when they were participating, it was like, gosh, why did I come to this meeting, like he said, if it went down that way? And so in the city of London, they have, I mean, if somebody's murdered in there, London has nothing to do with it. English law has nothing to do with it. Scotland Yard would not check it out. It would be their own law, their own enforcement, and their own investigators within that property, and they would see to it who was. And of course, if it happened to be a foreigner, then, you know, there would be diplomatic relations beginning to, not between England and whatever foreign power, but between the city of London, much like the Vatican and the Pope deals with the rest of the world. And so these people that have this agenda is part of that ruling monarchical body that got infiltrated, but those are still, those people had been there a long time before they finally was able to tip the scales and actually step into the throne. And as you know now, the stone of destiny that all these monarchs have been crowned on was removed from England and put into Scotland. Because
isn't that part of the Scottish Rite?
The Scottish Rite that you're talking about is not this stone of destiny that they're crowned on. This stone was Jacob's stone. That's why they call it, Jacob, Israel, or Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. See, it was Abraham, then it was Isaac, and then Isaac's son was Jacob. That was called Jacob's stone, and that was from Israel. Well, the reason why you're called Anglo-Saxon, that means son of Isaac. So we have a lot of nuances that we don't even think about. Just big clues that, like, Gordon Maxwell would tell us, gee, you know, it's right in front of us and we don't even see it because the words are telling us the truth.
Yeah,
fascinating.
And so the reason why we even have the Union Jack is because that was the flag that was flown in Israel to unite all the tribes of Jacob. Mm-hmm. Jacob / Israel. Jacob was turned, his name was changed to Israel. So
the identity
of these people got changed, and that was the group these aliens have targeted ever since they landed here eons ago on Mount Vernon. So that's a lot of history that I just went through that is all documented in the libraries of these people. And they know.
Okay, this is, yeah, this is very, very interesting, and I appreciate you coming forward to sort of, you know, link these dots, because I do believe that, that you're onto something here, and obviously you're talking about a group very specifically that are ET, that are reptilian, that have infiltrated a certain group, and that this group is now, in essence, come to power.
Right. I can
and
tell
how long
you this.
Back, when did it actually, in other words, when did they come to power specifically? Do you know?
It depends on which royal monarchical line you're talking about, and so if we're just talking about the English, more than likely the last one was with the Queen Mother. We definitely know Prince Charles is not a Stuart. We know that's a compromised position. We're pretty
right.
sure that Queen Elizabeth is, but we don't think Queen Mother is her mother. Now, prior to that, for generations, there was a huge effort to destabilize many of the royal monarchical ruling groups and administrative bodies that helped protect the people from this alien force. And so they began to chip away at the easier parts, because it's kind of hard to infiltrate when they're protecting a royal bloodline. And why they call it royal was because it didn't have that reptilian blood in it. It has nothing to do with the royal blood being bad. That's what the people that do all the media and all the schooling and all the change agents and all the liars want you to believe. It was actually a good body of people. Think of King Arthur and everything he had in place to help everybody got infiltrated, and so at the very last, somebody snuck in and became married to his son, and voila, now we have a compromised throne. However, prior to that, all of his knights got infiltrated, all of his money changers got infiltrated, all of his, you know, and they became diabolical right before him. I mean, in that story, you often see the sheriff in some of these, stories take, like, King Arthur, while he's gone, you know, the sheriff is bad. Well, it's because he got infiltrated a long time ago.
Actually, Rebecca is a psychic. And, Rebecca, you're still there, right?
Oh, absolutely. I'm fascinated by this conversation.
And it's very interesting, because Rebecca and I have had several conversations about King Arthur. And my take on King Arthur is a little more complex than the one you're talking about. And
yeah,
Rebecca also has some information that, you know, from that time. And obviously there's a great deal of controversy around the image of the person who was supposedly King Arthur. But there is, from my perspective, and Rebecca, you can certainly chime in here, and we have very little time in which to cover this sort of thing, but I just wanted you to be able to speak up and speak to this, which is, in essence, that King Arthur, it was not, in other words, at some point he himself was compromised.
Right.
Oh, I agree.
I use that as an analogy, too. I mean, it's easy to understand bringing that up. He was a good guy. He was Anglo-Saxon, but he was a good guy. And he was a royal, you know, so to speak, in that story. So that was easy to comprehend. Now, what makes it an Anglo-Saxon mission is that these bad guys that are reptile, who are not Anglo-Saxon, are using the Anglo-Saxon identity to bring forth this mission, and they're using that identity to bring forth the wrath and the blowback upon the white Anglo-Saxon people, because that is the most threatening civilization on the planet right now could do them in. You couldn't get Yemen to do it. You couldn't get the Congo to do it. You couldn't get many other groups. Now, there are some that are getting more powerful every day, but the biggest threat from the earth has been the civilizations by the Western culture, primarily Anglo-Saxon, And so that became their target. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Well, yeah, it's, again,
so they took that
still, to go back to King Arthur, you have to say that if he himself was compromised, then in essence, it's possible that he was infiltrated on a personal level, even perhaps. And, you know, and then you have to get into what it is. In other words, you've got what we're talking about, in essence, becomes the, not just the, you know, it becomes the reptilian agenda and
yeah,
the way in which they infiltrate, you know, humanity.
There's two ways that we're talking about here. One is just the change of heart. I mean, there's a lot of people out there that are not, have no blood of that type in them, but they're just bad people. I mean, they just chose to be in alliance with them. You know, we've got those people that are here now that aren't, you know, any descendant of a reptile, but they're just in the league with them. I mean, being the main thing that I wanted, that caveat I wanted to give, is just because they're Anglo-Saxon doesn't mean they're good people. So that meant they knew when they set this monarchical ruling system up that they weren't always going to get a King Arthur ruling. In fact, they'd probably get some idiots and, in fact, maybe even some evil people. But they had to try and keep that genetically pure. So that's why we have that genetic story about Noah. That's why we have the genetic bloodline in the line of David. That's why it became genetic. However, there's other ways to compromise, because you just turn somebody's heart and they turn into a bad guy, and they can kill, you know, 500 million people just as easy as a reptile.
But there's also, I mean, there was a terrific amount of inbreeding going on, and this also weakened the line.
Say that one more time.
There was a terrific amount of inbreeding going on in the monarchies of Europe, in which you got a lot of, you know, basically mentally deficient individuals coming out of that line.
Yeah, unfortunately, they didn't broaden their horizons. Like, I mean, they had 12 national identities to pick from. They could have picked somebody a long ways from their lineage that could have made that genetic predisposition to a lot of defects not be there. But they didn't always manage that correctly. Some of it was deliberate, and during those times, we might actually think that maybe somebody behind the scenes with an agenda made that happen, but they were the right people, but their children were not capable because they were just, you know, too closely related. We're not talking of, see, we oftentimes think that these civilizations that brought us so much knowledge of, you know, mathematics and language and so forth, and all of a sudden we think they're just stupid as all get out because they got this superstitious religion that had these Greek mythologies about Greek gods and so forth. And so we give them every credit in the world about being an advanced civilization and intelligent, except when it comes to being spiritual. And then they were just superstitious. But see, what happens is that's to hide this fight to infiltrate the genetics of mankind. That's all it is. But that doesn't mean that you're not going to also have that side that's bad recruiting people without being genetically crossed, at least with who was here already.
Well, okay, this is quite complex, but at some point, again, I want to bring you back to this meeting in which you've got this guy in the city of London participating in a meeting in which they're discussing, in essence, you know, future wars in a matter-of-fact way. And they're talking about a biological, you know, war with China. Now, I was talking to a whistleblower recently about this information. And what they said to me was that, in essence, that China, the Chinese rulers, would be on board with this bio-warfare against China, against their own country, in essence. Because they were on board with the elimination of certain segments of their own population.
Okay, that we have to remember, too, that all the ruling elite in all these very powerful countries are all compromised. And they're like mafia bosses. They don't walk around and dance in a circle in a square dance on Saturday night because they're having fun with each other. They're more like mafia bosses, one from Chicago, one from New York, one from Kansas City. They go, or from New Orleans. They all go to Kansas City and sit around the table, and they cooperate begrudgingly with each other because if they don't, they know they'll lose the power base that they've got. So until they get a very big advantage over another person in around that table, they're not going to compromise them. And yet they still have to cooperate, and that's what we've got with these malevolent people. In the meantime, that's why they identify themselves as an Anglo-Saxon mission, because they've taken upon themselves this identity, which they really aren't, in order to fool everybody that it's the Anglo-Saxons, so that can help wipe them out. Now, that is not, this group is after the Chinese people. They really are. Now you go, well, if they're bad people, why would they go after them? Well, that's kind of complicated too, because there's two groups in there, and one of them, by the way, and this is to kind of unzip another thing that will take way more than 10 minutes, but as you already know, the World Health Organization head is from China. We had this outbreak of swine flu, which wasn't there to kill anybody. The swine flu outbreak was a cover-up so that they could release another biological weapon within that outbreak to mask it as a pleomorphic or morphed change of the H1N1 virus. And knowing that wouldn't kill everybody off because Anglo-Saxons and everybody else in the world was going to get it. And the reason that occurred wasn't so much from the standpoint of Novartis from the Anglo-Saxon world as much as it was from China. Now, this is where we probably are going to get everybody lost. And so now we're seeing a retaliation to the Chinese and the head of WHO helping mask this attack upon the Ukrainians, who by and large are Anglo-Saxon, and are trying to kick back. Now, why they do that isn't because they're good guys in the city of London. They're doing it against the Chinese to make it look like the Anglo-Saxon race is attacking China. They always have to throw the obvious away from themselves and put the spotlight and the blame on somebody else. And so that gets it very convoluted. And
well,
I know
that's
I probably
actually no, but I have to say that was actually substantiated by a whistleblower that I was talking to who agrees with you, who said that, in essence, that the virus itself was manufactured in China.
Yes, it is.
So apparently you have the same information.
Right. I know it is. And it was not necessarily the original H1N1 virus wasn't necessarily a pandemic epidemic killer. It was to be spread worldwide so that they could mask the release of a deadly one and then just target who they want after it got spread and just say, oh, it's just a morphing of that virus.
Right, but also wasn't the H1N1 supposed to be a carrier? It was the carrier. And then the real virus is, I don't know, bird flu or something else.
Well, there can be, that's another hour, Carrie. We got to.
I know. And Rebecca, I want you to know that, you know, Dr. Waterman is really a doctor, and he was very involved in sort of explaining the whole virus thing that was going on, and got very involved in helping people to heal from that.
Well, we do have. I did have a lot of. It very much paralleled the outbreak of West Nile, which the state of Oklahoma pulled me in on because it was an outbreak on horses that was killing 40% of them, and the next jump was going to be to the human population. Had it not stopped, there was not going to be 0.5% or 2% people dying. There was going to be probably 30%, 40%, or 50% of the people dying. And that's
okay, but we have like 2 minutes. I'm really sorry because the music's going to start so quickly here. Are you able to say what the next, in other words, the rollout? Do you believe that, for example, that this agenda that's talked about in the Anglo-Saxon meeting that this guy was part of will happen, or do you believe that it's going to be taken off track?
I know for a fact that it's being taken off track in various areas. And it's so complicated and has so many fronts, I couldn't really tell you all of them are going to be successfully derailed. But I will tell you the one that they're most adamant about making happen that seems to be well on track, and that's the financial collapse into a world monetary system. And that is rolling like lightning. It doesn't seem to be getting stopped.
Okay, well, that's very valuable. And, obviously we have a few more minutes, and if you want to add anything to that, go right ahead. But let me say that, again, this is Carrie Cassidy, Project Camelot, and we are with Rebecca Jernigan and Dr. John Waterman, and this has been a fascinating impromptu show. And, gosh, there goes the music. So I want to thank you both for coming on. Neither of you had preparation, and you've been incredible. It's been a fascinating discussion, and hopefully we can do this again real soon.
Love to. And, John, it was very nice meeting you. Thank you, Carrie.
Nice meeting you.
Thank you both.
When I look out my window, there's so many sights to see.
To imagine when things are going reasonably well, just how quickly things can change. But what would it take? Economic collapse, massive crop failure, chemical or biological attack.
So, that homeschoolers will not be able to participate fully in society because they lack socialization. To address this criticism from a research perspective, the Homeschool Legal Defense Association commissioned a study to discover how homeschoolers are faring as adults. It was conducted by Brian Ray of the National Home Education Research Institute. In all areas of life, from gaining employment, to being satisfied with homeschooling, to participating in community activities, to voting, homeschoolers were found to be more active and involved than their public school peers. This good news is in addition to the fact that the average homeschooler scores 37 percentile points higher on standard achievement tests than the public school average. We now have a new longitudinal study made by the Canadian Center for Home Education. It's entitled 15 Years Later, Home-Educated Canadian Adults. This study surveyed homeschooled students whose parents participated in a comprehensive study on home education in 1994 and compared those homeschoolers who are now adults with their peers. The results are astounding. When measured against the average Canadians, home-educated Canadian adults were more socially engaged. 69% participated in organized activities at least once a week, compared with only 48% of the comparable population. Average income for homeschoolers was higher. It's even significant that while 11% of Canadians aged 15 to 34 rely on welfare, there were no cases of government support as the primary source of income for any homeschoolers. Homeschoolers are succeeding in a wide variety of professions, and 96% of homeschoolers think homeschooling prepared them very well for life.
This has been the Phyllis Schlafly Report, presented by Eagle Forum, leading America's pro-family movement since 1972. For a free copy of Eagle Forum's pamphlet on teaching your children at home, write to Eagle Forum Radio, Alton, Illinois, 62002. please include your name and address and ask for the homeschooling report. That address again, Eagle Forum Radio, Alton, Illinois, 62002. And join us again next time for the Phyllis Schlafly Report.
By dialing 866-